You are now listening to NIIT Radio.
But thank you for coming. I'd like to introduce our moderator to you for today's session. His name is Venkat Srinivasan. Hello. Venkat is Vice President of NIIT USA, an MBA in Global Business from Georgia Tech. Venkat's areas of interest and research include online education, student retention, and new technologies for training and certification. Venkat has over 15 years' experience in business strategy and operations in the education and training industry. Venkat, I'll hand over to you. Enjoy your session. If there's anything that anybody needs throughout the rest of the day or even tomorrow, all of my team from the UK is out and about somewhere. Just call us for whatever you want. Kimberly, thank you.
Thank you, Matthew. Thank you for this introduction. And again, once again, I welcome you all to this session. Having said that, let me introduce our speakers. I have Ian Clements from Diageo. Ian is a learning systems specialist, and he's responsible for managing the entire online curriculum for over 25,000 core employees in Diageo. He's also involved with a much larger network of joint ventures, partner organizations, and external contractors who work with Diageo, so training all of them, skilling them to perform their duties and responsibilities. He's also featured in many numerous publications as a conference speaker, as well as written several articles on his area. And he has an MPhil from
University of Huddersfield.
From the University of Bradford, and he's also a graduate of the University of Huddersfield. So that's Ian Clements.
Hello, everyone.
Then I have Laura Overton. Laura is the managing director for Towards Maturity. She has over two decades of experience helping organizations develop sustainable strategies to improve business impact of learning technologies. So how do you use learning technologies in the context of a learning and development organization? Towards Maturity is a not-for-profit community interest company and very soon becoming the benchmark for learning research and learning in the UK area. That's Laura Overton. We also have Mark Hilber. Mark Hilber is a partner at OpenOff and Partner. Mark specializes in advising companies on technology-related transactions, and in particular on joint ventures and outsourcing related to key functional areas that his customers want to outsource. So he advises them from the legal side. He's an attorney by profession. He's also an expert on national and international data protection laws. So that's going to be our panel discussion speakers today. So let me start the discussion. What I wanted to do was set context to this discussion on how we can deliver business impact with next generation outsourcing models. I'm going to start with an agenda. So after I set the context, I'm going to share a little bit of industry reports and what's happening, which will set the tone for this session. And then once we do that, we're going to have Laura present her research and talk about why it is time now to look at outsourcing training services, and then move on to a case in point where Diageo, under Ian's leadership, has successfully done training outsourcing projects. And finally, we will have Mark talk about the legal environment of sourcing methods, especially with respect to outsourcing. What are the things you do, what you don't do, what are the pitfalls, what are the learnings that his customers have been through. After that, once we do the individual presentations, I would like to share some evolving models that we have seen coming up in the marketplace, especially with customers, with partners, and we can have a roundtable discussion with that model. So that's what the session is going to be about. Here is a latest Burson and Associates research study, which talks about the challenges faced by enterprises. The biggest challenge is change or rapid business growth that's leading to put pressure on internal L&D organizations as well as external organizations, like when you do customer training or partner training. How do you rapidly grow to meet business growth, as well as how do you manage change? The second reason, competitive threats. Then launching new products, financial pressure to cut costs. These are all common things that everybody in this room have heard. I wanted to set this context by saying, I'm sure within our organizations, everybody is faced with similar challenges. And these ratios may change. For somebody, cost may be more priority, management team may be lower, global expansion may be on the cards, rapid change may be coming up because of a new technology rollout. So while the priorities may shift, but these seems to be the typical challenges faced by most enterprises today. And when you encounter these challenges, how does a learning organization respond to that? When they respond to these challenges, what they are being told is you are not aligned to the business. The training services is not aligned to the business that we are in. Secondly, how do you increase effectiveness of your programs? How do you make sure you can reduce the cost of training? How do you run training as a business? Simply put, summarizing this slide, if you can run training also as a business, then you have a winning strategy. But many L&D organizations today either do or are faced with numerous obstacles in trying to run training as a successful business. So one of the things that many training organizations are looking to do is, can we partner? Can we bring in an outsourced service provider who can take the training function and give me more control and help me meet the initiatives that I've put forth for the training function? So one of the surveys has said that, you know, people have more control over business outcomes or ability to plan, reduction in spending and headcount, employees, etc. They get more control of how they can manage the training function if they work successfully with an outsourced partner rather than doing this in-house. But the traditional approach in which learning organizations are today, it becomes very difficult to successfully implement an outsourcing partnership because they are all in different stages of evolution. A lot of L&D organizations go through this maturity level where, you know, they are at different points. Either they are running as a, you know, a high-performing heroics team, or they're doing project-based management, going from one project to the other, and, you know, as a cost center, just following repeatable processes and making sure, you know, there's no other change, no, not much innovation happening. But what they don't realize is that the gains from this operations is when you reach that maturity level 5, where you're optimized. And one of the ways that you could get there is by engaging with an outsourcing partner or who focuses on training services as a core competency. So what we're going to go talk about today is, what are the various pitfalls of outsourcing? Why is it the right time to implement an outsourcing model? And then discuss some best practices of, you know, a case in point where how this has been achieved. So having said that, I would like to invite my first speaker, Laura, to talk about why is it the right time now?
Yeah, I just wanted to say thank you to you guys to invite us here. Nigel and I both spent a large number of years in working in the training industry, most of the time in higher background, but in the last 5 to 7 years, what we've been doing is coming outside of that and researching what customer organisations are actually doing with learning technologies and with training moving forward, with a view to actually help them move forward. And I think what we wanted to do today was just to set the scene a little bit from the perspective of actually saying, okay, well, what does learning provision as a whole need to look like? There's been a lot of change going on globally and in the UK, and I want to share some research, not only ours, but also research from organisations like eSkills UK, who have been really looking at the IT skills agenda here in the UK, and to really draw that through to set the context of the discussion today, if that's okay with you. So this really, I think all of us have been facing this, certainly in the last year. It's become less of a wind of change, more of a kind of a storm, a hurricane of the things that have been going on at the moment. But you know, I think the winds of change are actually affecting the IT industry. It's been really well articulated, actually, in the eSkills UK book. And if you haven't, if you're not familiar with what they're doing on learning learning research data in the UK. It's really worth having a look at. They're just about to refresh this data as well at the moment. But what they were saying is actually, you know, it's just expressing really what we're all experiencing. You've already articulated it through the birthing stuff, but here in the UK, you know, that rapid change, that rapid growth, the business and economic changes that are actually happening, the rate of change in technology as well. A lot has bubbling off the surface as well around carbon issues, becoming kind of shifting to low carbon thinking, and they're really finding that is taking an effect in terms of IT and IT related skills that are needed in the UK. It's a real trend moving forward. And also they're finding a lot about the kind of jobs people are coming into and the fact that the traditional entry-level jobs are more located offshore. So the skills that are needed in IT in the UK are needing to be that much higher to actually be thinking through the business application of IT into the environment. So there's a lot of world change is actually happening, a lot of implications for the skills needed in IT in the UK. And as I say, I'm not going to tell you everything that's in here, but it's downloadable free off the eSkills UK website if you want to get more of a handle of what's actually happening there. And it was quite interesting, when they first released this, one of the eSkills UK board members, they're led by a board of employers, Larry Hurst, LinkedIn from IBM in the UK, and many other key organisations are working through them. And one of the board members actually said, you know, at the moment we need IT professionals who understand technology and business processes and how, understand how they react and that they can take a leadership role. And it's really interesting because most of the time I spend my time working with learning and development people. And really this is exactly the issue that we're finding with learning and development as well. And we're finding now there's a real shift with learning and development, and organisations are starting to say, actually we need more. We need more from our traditional training function. We need learning professionals who actually understand technology, understand business processes, understand how they come together, and can take a leadership role in business transformation. And yet, many learning and development departments we're finding in the UK just aren't positioned to be able to take that. And I think as learning providers, whether internally within the organisation or working with customers, I think that now is the time that we need to step up to this. We've been talking about these challenges, these winds of change, for quite some time. But now really is the time. I think the recession, what we've noticed with our research, has really made a difference. A government, I'm not going to run through this again, but if you're interested in this side of things, a government report from the UK, New Industry, New Jobs, talking about kind of some of the strategic types of directions we need to take in the UK about skills in general. And funnily enough, they're the same business drivers that are also driving change in IT. Efficiency, how to address the skills that need global competition, the low carbon thinking, the need to meet demographic changes as well. Older people leaving work, the young people coming in having different expectations, the consumer oriented, different style of taking and using information, the shift to the knowledge economy. And again, you know, what are the implications really for learning and development within that? And I think one of the things that we are finding is that businesses generally of learning and development and of learning and development providers are just demanding much more for much less. The thing, what do they want more of? And I don't know whether this resonates with you in terms of your customers asking this of you. But, you know, we want more sales. We want more delivery through our supply chain. We want to be able to get more consistency through the supply chain with our channel partners. We want more adoption of our services and solutions. We want more scalability. We need to be able to ramp up and ramp up quickly. The high growth companies addressed in the Burson report. Those types of issues. This is about getting out there and hitting the market fast. More innovation. I know you guys have been incredible in some of the innovations that you've been included, but I expect you relate to that. Once you deliver some innovation, people want more and more in order to keep pace. More accessibility of learning, more speed, more responsiveness. Bite-size. You know, these are the things that are coming out all the time that we've found. And what we've found also is that people want that delivered, but with less. Budgets are being frozen or sometimes reduced. People are being frozen, sometimes reduced, often reduced in learning and development in terms of the customer base. less carbon footprints, you know, the whole CSR issue around that, less disruption to business. You know, with people, everyone's under pressure. How are we going to be doing things with more? And less people resources too. And I think under, as learning providers, we're under the squeeze here. And I think customers, internal customers, and also external customers say, you know, if I don't get this from you right now, then I'm gonna look elsewhere. And certainly we've seen a lot of trends of organisations, you know, perhaps ignoring their central learning and development department because they're not fast enough to move. And they're perhaps moving from supplier to supplier because they're just not quite responsive enough to actually meet what they need at that time. So there's quite a lot of stress that's actually happening through at the moment. And really, these just summarise some of the shifts that we are seeing right now. They've been around. Those of us who've been in the industry of a while have been familiar with this. But certainly, Nigel and I, through our research in this space over the last number of years, have seen an acceleration into this. Where traditionally, it was a few people who said, you know, actually, we need to move from being a course provider to being a business solution. Now we're seeing that thinking in the UK becoming much more mainstream. And it's very interesting to be involved with some of the press, my training journal, and some of the things that they're actually saying, actually now we have to get out of our ivory tower of delivering courses and have to change. They're seeing this year jobs have been slashed, more demands have been put on, and there's a real hunger and a drive for these sorts of things. So moving from the, you know, I'm a supplier and here's my catalogue, which one do you want, to what do you need? What is it that you need in learning right now? And this is both from a provider perspective, we're seeing providers having to change, but also an internal perspective as well. From being trainer-centric, from us being here talking to you, to being facilitating performance improvements. So that the role of the trainer is starting to shift, and there's a bit more demand for new skills in the trainer to say, okay, I don't want you standing up delivering classrooms all over and over again. What I want you to do is get out there, find good practice, share good practice, make it happen, make learning happen within the business. You know, the focus on the business impact across the supply chain. You know, right across the board, not just in certifications and working with your channel partners, but right across the board in terms of all partners who are working with products in their supply chain. How do we get that consistency moving through? Because that is becoming the competitive advantage. Moving from formal learning to a continuum of learning, you know, where performance support, actually helping people on the job, is as important as that one-off initial investigation. And again, a lot of buzz, a lot of hype around that, the 80-20, you've come across all of that. That's now starting to bite. You know, BT, you've got great examples of that. A real shift has happened really in the last year in the Dare to Share project, hasn't it? It's starting to say, okay, you know, formal learning is great, and e-learning is great for informal interventions, but we need to be continually supporting, and as learning organisations can't be there doing that all the time, so how do we help people to support each other? So that long continuum of learning, from fixed to saleable, just in time. And again, I was very conscious when I put this together, oh my goodness, I've seen this like so many times over the last year. You know, but what I'm seeing right now is a real change in the market to saying, okay, we need the people who are asking for this, who were never asking for it before from providers. So making that shift, you know, what are the three things that I think that we need to really consider in this discussion today? The first and foremost one, I think, is an issue of skills and attitude. And I've mentioned before about the learning training journal, and I would really recommend that you actually, it's free, off their site. They've actually done a piece of work with the Institute of Employment Studies recently that actually said, okay, what does learning and development need to look like in 2020? And it's very interesting because their traditional audience is the stand-up trainer, the traditional classroom who may have done a bit of e-learning to supplement their classroom training, but their core business. And so for this organisation to actually go out and say what needs to happen means that things are shifting. And what they found in this report are the types of skills that we're going to need moving forward are taking out of the classroom to look at business skills, business acumen, the ability to develop value within an organization, the ability to have that kind of conversation with business. And these are the skills that they believe trainers and learning professionals are going to need moving forward. The ability to articulate and demonstrate value of solutions. The ability to create learning solutions on the fly. New skills to actually say, you know, okay, traditionally I had a course, but that's not what you need for this business issue right now. What you need is, and then be able to draw on all of the different toolkits. So really moving into more of a craft profession rather than a manufacturing profession, moving into those types of skills. And I think that's a very interesting, as I say, shift that I think is really worth exploring, and I would certainly recommend that you draw down that. The traditional skills aren't going to go away, but what they're saying is they're going to need to be supplemented with business acumen, and we need to be able to ramp that up and ramp that up fast. That is a running theme throughout the rest of what I'm going to say, so I'm not just leaving it. I want to draw through on it. But I'd like to also then just look at what else is enabling that shift right now. And say, Nigel and I, and many of you probably in the room, have been using learning technologies over a very, very long period of time. And just because technology might be able to help you do something doesn't necessarily mean that it will. In the same way that the eSkills report says, you know, just because you've got a university degree in computing does not mean to say that you actually can make IT applicable in the business that you're working in. And it's the same with technology and learning. And really what I want to share with you in this particular field, is just to sow some seeds for discussion later, is some results from our last piece of benchmarking that we did in the UK. It's the third time we've done this. So in total, around about 700 businesses have been through our benchmarking process. And I just want to show you what kind of trends we're seeing coming through that kind of map into some of those areas before. Busy slide, I know. But what was interesting is 2 years ago, when we said, why are you investing in learning technology, only one or two of these were off the end. It was mainly flexibility, accessibility, and a bit of cost saving. What's interesting when this was done, it was done just about probably 8-9 months ago in terms of hitting right in the recession. Suddenly organizations are saying, okay, you know, it's not just the flexible, accessible learning that we want anymore. We now want learning technologies to help us with business problems, more qualified workforce, addressing our customer satisfaction, productivity issues. You know, they're all up there and a significant number of areas, induction processes. Yeah, so organizations are actually demanding more from what they're actually wanting in learning technologies now than they have been over the last 2 years, let alone over the last 10 years. So we're at businesses in the UK are expecting technology to deliver. Now, as we all know, expectations and hope don't necessarily mean results. But that's where organisations like yourselves come in to help make that actually happen. We've seen some real change in priorities. You know, reach has gone up. You know, people want to get to more. Talking Venkat earlier about the reaching down the supply chain, and certainly our research is really backing that up. People need to get further, more consistency as they get further as well. Meeting the needs of next generation learners. And an interesting one for me was the fact that more organisations were turning to technology now because they wanted to give the appearance of being a progressive organisation, either as an employer wanting to attract people in or as learning providers, and really seeing that effective and innovative use of technology is making a difference on their position in the marketplace, either in terms of attracting customers or attracting potential employees moving forward. And the other change that we've seen, funnily enough, in the recession, was more people wanted to support organisational change with technology, and that was a big leap for us as well. And certainly we're seeing that it's being backed by increased investment. The purple ones that run in a bell curve actually show the question that we asked was, you know, is your training budget going to stay the same, decrease, stay the same, or increase? And at the time, it was pretty much most of us are going to stay the same. We did ask this question 2 months later, and that shifted more into decrease and stay the same, and very few increasing. But what was interesting, when we said, of that budget that you have, how much are you planning to allocate to learning technologies? And that was on the increase. And as you can see there, the exponential curve. So, you know, people, they're putting their money where their mouth is. But again, having hope, putting budget in, does not necessarily deliver results either. What are people investing in? I know I'm giving you a real 5 seconds overview almost of a lot of months of research, but if you are interested, you can download and look at the detail of this, because we do recommend, particularly for training providers, you know, that it's free. You know, so we're not, this is not a charge for thing. It's courtesy of Her Majesty's government, these reports that I've been talking to about today. But say, both Nigel and I come from a provider background as well. And, you know, I think if we had this information when we were working and presenting to our customers, you know, it would have been particularly helpful. What are people doing? Why are they doing it? Content delivery. What we're seeing a lot of increase in things like rapid content, doing virtual classrooms, things going in-house. We're also seeing really strong growth in and sustainable growth in bespoke outsourced content programs as well. But what organisations are doing now, they're mixing and matching. What is the piece that we want to outsource, and what's the piece we want to grab right now and do something with immediately, you know, to be seen in a very responsive way. And so the way that they're managing that resource internally is changing too. We're also seeing a certain amount of increase in tools which are supporting application and reflection on the job. Things like blogs, things like wikis, things like peer-to-peer sharing. You know, that's starting to come about now. But what's interesting is that the learning providers, those who get learning, who get the fact that actually training doesn't stop when you walk out of the classroom, but needs to be applied, needs to be continued, they're the ones that seem to grasp these tools faster, and yet the more mature organisations in business are also doing that as well. But that's not a consistent practice, but it's one that actually is making a lot of difference in terms of skills and application. And then on learning management and administration, tools like competency management tools and things like that, they're on the increase. Learning management systems are very solid growth. About 70% of organisations were using learning management systems in some way, or learning content management systems as well. Again, just a flavour, because there's a lot of trends of what's moving, what's going up, what's going down. I don't want to bore you with that. Because what I really like to touch on is something we talked about before. The fact that you can, and the fact that you're putting your money in, does not mean to say that you're actually going to get what you've hoped for at the beginning. And certainly over the years where we've done this, we actually have asked organisations, you know, what kind of maturity level, you talked about maturity earlier, what kind of maturity level do you think you are at? You know, are you brand new? Are you a sporadic user of learning technology? You're putting it in here and there, a quick project, you know, we're addressing a change program or something. Are you moving on from there and kind of starting to develop and coordinate your use of learning technologies within the business? Do you think you're established? Do you actually think that actually, no, now it's something we go to as one of our first port of calls when we're thinking about learning, designing a program? There's always a level of thinking. It's not that it's always used, but it's always considered in the program. Or is it embedded, i.e. it's actually part of the learning culture within your organisation? But what we've asked that question, you can see again, there's an even spread. But when we also ask the same audience questions about, you know, what results are you getting from these technologies? What kind of expectations are you getting? What we're finding is that the more mature, consistently over these benchmarking surveys that we've done, are much more likely to actually say that they're achieving what they set out to achieve in terms of organisational objectives, much more likely to say that they've got more motivated and staff, more satisfied staff as a result of some of their new interventions. And also, whilst it's not relevant from a business perspective, it's useful from a training perspective, much more likely to say that they've got high take-up of these types of learning services, e-learning, etc., within their organisation. Example of this, for example, the established group are 6 times as likely to say they believe that the quality of their learning intervention has improved as a result of using learning technologies than the sporadic. 3 times as likely to actually say that their end user customers are more satisfied with them as a business when they start to use learning technologies in the way that they interact with their customer facing staff and also with their customers as well. three times as likely to have staff satisfaction, and three times as likely to be able to respond quickly in business as well. What's stopping business moving forward? I'm just going to share this with you a little bit. It's no longer cost and infrastructure that are the main barriers. They still exist, and again, if you draw down the report on differences around sectors, some of these are different in different sectors. But the key thing for us that we found at the tail end of last year was it was all about skill and attitude. And the thing that was stopping people from actually achieving this, moving on in maturity, achieving their objectives, was their own ability to take this content and actually make it work in that environment. And there are, you know, some of the statistics are actually quite astounding. I think less than 30% actually align learning to business objectives. Now, this is interesting. You as a learning supplier, working potentially with your clients, you know, there's a value add there that you can offer immediately. So what are the six things that more successful organisations are doing, the more mature are doing? And again, these are skill areas, and funnily enough, it's actually only one that's directly related to technology. Issues around defining needs, alignment, understanding about what businesses need. So these are the types of things that more mature organisations are doing. Understanding learner context. What's the culture of the environment we're working into? What's the work-life balance of individuals? What's the motivation of individuals? The command and control context of the army is going to be different from the health service. It's going to be different from the finance, which will be different from the drink sector. So understanding that is a real strength of the more mature. Understanding about work context. Not just the IT infrastructure, but the management culture within that structure as well. And the way that they engage with managers to support the learning and apply the learning as well. Much more proactive in the more mature. Building capability is about the fact that they're actually much more focused on building their own skills, raising the bar of their own internal learning and development skills. More likely to be training in blended learning, more likely to be training up in ways, how do we use these reflective tools, more likely to be training them up on the ability to be able to go out and talk to business. Very proactive in ensuring engagement, very proactive strategies on communication, and very proactive strategies on demonstrating value back in the business. So, the learning and development surveys that Training Journal did about, you know, what skills might be needed in the future, we are finding those identical skills as summarised here are what are needed by learning and development professionals now, particularly if they want to take advantage of technology in their learning solutions. We found that these strands of activity actually all link together. You don't start at one end and then move on. Defining needs very closely linked into demonstrating value. Demonstrating value is very closely associated with ensuring engagement. You know, the work context and the learner context, you know, they're more like a six-legged race. You know, if you don't take a step forward with one, then actually it pulls all of the rest of them back. And that's really certainly what we've found in this. This just shows you the common areas of weakness. Again, with our sample, those who actually responded to saying whether or not they felt that their learning solutions were delivering business impact, you can see it's divided down here. On this side, is those who are in the bottom quartile of those who develop business impact, and you can see here that pretty much these strands are not very strong at all, yet consistently every single one of them is practiced in those who are actually seeing business impact from their investment, which is what we're all about. So there are a few areas of weakness that stand out, and again, as learning providers, you know, where do you think you actually fit on this as well? You know, in terms of your solutions that you're providing for your customers. So in terms of the skills, as I say, those two are starting to come together now. You know, and these aren't technology skills. These are about learning and development. It's almost like a triangulation of content. Learning and development is changing. It is shifting. And there are skill sets that we actually need to do that. So in terms of making the shift, the final thing that I want to do before we kind of open up is to actually look at the learning process. You know, as learning and development professionals, where are we actually adding value? Because when we come back to that original premise of doing more with less, the issue I think that we're facing is that, you know, that we're not multiplying. You know, we can't go out and recruit big teams. the technology we've already talked about, we've touched on the fact that that might help. But also it's worth looking at the process itself. We've talked about the skills of business engagement and, you know, that process of engaging internally within the business, engaging with customers. You know, the learning process, the issues of content delivery, content development. If customers are demanding more bespoke solutions, more off-the-shelf solutions, more, and want them faster, want them tomorrow as opposed to in a few months' time, you know, what are the implications of the processes around content development and content delivery as well, learning delivery? You know, there are a range of different processes around learning delivery as well, and also around performance support, the extent to which we're supporting. And obviously there's the whole administration layer as well, the scheduling, the resourcing, the reporting, the management. And the thing is, where are we spending our time? And also, where are we then also adding most business value? And is where we're spending our time the thing that's actually adding the most business value? And again, obviously, the technology element can enable that process, and we're certainly seeing a lot of it. But I think it's quite interesting to actually see a lot of decision processes going on. So where am I best? Am I best spent putting my time interacting with customers in the back end, developing content, running my learning management system? You know, and these are questions that are going on all the time. And certainly from the surveys in the States, actually, from I think it was Training Journal that actually did this. And they've been benchmarking this in the States as well. I'm sorry I couldn't get some UK stuff. But, you know, the outsourcing practices, I think I can resonate with some of these that are actually happening through in the UK. There's a level of instruction, obviously that's increasing outsourcing. Custom content development, more in 2007, still a lot more than before, probably, but contracting possibly a little bit, and again, we see that reflection because people are now starting to blend the rapid tools with the custom content tools. The LMS hosting, and again, people are saying, oh, we haven't got the space, the time to be able to do that now. You know, we want to get rid of that. We don't need to do that. That's not where we're adding value. But where we are potentially adding value is in that whole business engagement area. The individual one-on-one learner support. Some are learning, moving to technologies to actually use that. But actually that one-to-one phone, etc. support, more and more are looking at that as well. So this gives a flavour of where we might need to be thinking about that. And really when we start focusing on the value add, you know, which bits do we outsource and which bits don't we? I'm not here to actually say you must outsource. Other people are much more qualified to actually say that. But this is just some of the things that we are noticing, really. You know, that issue of scalability, the issue of moving to mass adoption. You know, you're just rolling out a few certifications, but you need to hit more people and you need to hit them rapidly. And you have to maintain quality, maintain standards. You know, is that something that it's worth scaling up for internally, or is there a better value? Consolidation of services. You know, we're seeing a lot of people in the priory group, for example, in the UK does all rehabilitation and stuff like that. Originally, a few years ago, each of them did their own learning and development. Consolidated now into one central focus. Achieving efficiencies now, something like £9 million over the last 5 years, just by that kind of focus of bringing things together. Reducing operating costs for that. Leveraging external expertise. You know, when do you build it yourself? What kind of skills are you building internally? And what ones do you buy in? And again, that adding value on that as well. And again, focus on value add. So, winds of change, storms of change. I think there are some options that we've got. Historically, I think a lot of learning and development professionals in the UK have thought, oh my goodness, all this business change is happening. I'm going to put up my umbrella. I'm going to shelter for a while and it will all go away. I think a lot this year have found their umbrellas going inside out and have now been useless. And I think what we're seeing is successful organisations saying, okay, the winds of change are there, we're going to make them happen. We're actually going to get out there, we're going to harness them, we're going to change what we're doing, and we're going to take that change that's going on and redirect our energy so that we've actually become that kind of powerhouse that underpins the businesses and the channels that we're in.
Thank you, Laura. Let me actually start with a question, and then if there is any other question, you know, more than happy to ask Laura. In your mind, when you did these research surveys and talked to customers, are customers quantifying the spend on training, and are they measuring the value they are getting in return? What has been your experience with that?
It's very interesting. Nigel and I have been involved with an evidence for change program. We would actually be going out at the moment and saying, okay, what value are you getting? And we're finding that a lot of customers actually aren't looking at measuring value. It's something that they have not done historically. It's something that they haven't necessarily been asked to do. But it's actually something that we find that the more successful organisations who've made investments do. But it's not the majority who actually do that that measurement. And many don't even have a handle on what they're actually spending. And one of the first steps is, I think this year, they're being asked to look at it. And it's been a shock. And because they're not demonstrating value, they can't necessarily justify the cost involved as well.
Thanks for that. Just one point, if I may add to that. It isn't just a learning technology issue.
Yeah.
That's a broader training issue. If we took the learning technologies out of the equation and asked the same question, can you really measure the value of the training you deliver? It's been a holy grail for many time immemorial. So we've always had that issue.
Yeah.
We're starting to see it put more into focus.
You said earlier that in your studies you found that organisations moving to learning technologies and adopting learning technologies sometimes don't pick it up and run with it as quickly as they would have anticipated. What do you advise in those situations? Is there best practices to educate the organisation to adopt more quickly and more effectively? Because it could be a horror story. Companies invest and it just doesn't go anywhere. So,
we only advise based on what we've found out.
Yeah.
And as I say, we've now had 500-700 organisations been through our benchmark survey. And we didn't go out to benchmark to look to prove a point and say this is what we believe is actually happening. We went out and we investigated. There's something like, those who go through the benchmark have to invest like 40-50 minutes in it. But we asked them about something like 120 different elements. But from that, behind the scenes, we've been able to correlate what are good practices that actually deliver results and what don't, what are not. And that's really that six-point model there. So in terms of acceleration, what we've found is when we do case studies on our site, those that are more successful tend to have followed that model. They haven't taken our model to apply, although we're being increasingly asked for that. But that's the stuff that they're actually doing. They're going and talking to business first. They're looking at learner needs, they're looking at the work context, they're looking at issues of management support, they're spotting gaps, they're creating solutions that actually are tailored to that, rather than saying technology will do the trick just because it can.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean it will.
Do companies historically that were selling training models, would they typically go in, sell the technology solution and then kind of walk away from the customer? And you think they're more obligated now to follow it up and make sure that the customer adoption is there?
I think the good ones always have done and still do. And the not so good ones haven't and still don't see why they should.
Right.
There is a real mix.
But that is the difference, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think it's so in the UK, but to broaden it out, there are those suppliers, providers, who are a bit like the cream, they rise to the top, and they understand it.
Yeah.
And it's not rocket science, actually. It's pretty elementary at the end of the day.
Mm.
It's all about understanding the need, providing an appropriate solution, developing a relationship with the client, working hand in hand with them. Exactly right.
Yeah.
But that also represents a mind shift for them. Mm. And I think the better ones understand that and do it. If I may just add to your earlier question, we still do encounter many organisations who had a foray into using, let's call it e-learning, many years ago, and got their fingers burnt, and it didn't work, and they didn't like it, and there's kind of one spit and twice shy, and they don't want to go back to it. So you have to, in an independent way, convince them that actually things have gone a long, long way and organisations of all sizes and scales are actually doing it and doing it very successfully. So what is it they're doing? So you can learn from those bitter experiences.
Mm.
And you might realise Laura and I rarely use the term e-learning,
yeah,
because I suspect if we debated it, e-learning tends to mean almost a silo of content. And that's not to decree it, that's what people are most associated with. But towards learning technologies is much more broader than that.
Yeah.
Collaboration, podcasting, everything else, and management, and outsourcing everything.
And really for us, for those who don't have a good support, that's one of the reasons why we exist, because we're a free set of resources for organisations and for customers to actually be able to go themselves, and for also suppliers who, when people look at them and say, well, you would say that because you're trying to sell me something. And I'm sure that doesn't happen to any of you in this room. It probably only ever used to happen to me all those years ago. It's actually a place where you can say, look, it's not me that said, try and think about your business objectives. Here's some research that actually shows that you can do that. And here are some case studies of other people doing other things that actually do work. We also try and find stories that don't work, but people aren't as keen to share those.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. So I think we sort of overshot our time, so I want to just take a few minutes to summarize what we heard today. I think we all realize that there is the winds of change, as Laura pointed out, and training and L&D functions are changing. They're trying to run training as a business, align to the business, and create the impact that is necessary. We saw a case in front of us where Ian talked about selecting a single service provider and then providing the choice for learners, which I think was the biggest value add from what they were doing, as well as they communicated and made sure that the initiative was successful, apart from traditional cost savings and cost avoidance and productivity benefits of using an outsourced training partner. And lastly, I think we learned a lot about services agreements, what should we do, what should we include, what we should not include, some tricky areas. I think that is a very key piece of structuring the relationship, because it is a painful process. We sometimes go through 6 to 9 months of contracting before actually entering into an engagement in some cases. Yeah. Now, having said that, again, on another flip side, training outsourcing is not really that complex to do either. So what I want to leave you all with is a slide where there are different ways of outsourcing. So instead of doing a total outsourcing, which Mark talked about, there could be selective areas of outsourcing, which is specific functions within the training pyramid. So it may be only development, or maybe just delivery, or maybe just administration. Or in other words, you could look at outsourcing a complete business segment. So for customer healthcare compliance training, or for employee Six Sigma training. So you could then look at the entire function across the horizontal and vertical, but only for a specific initiative. And lastly, there could be specific project-based outsourcing, which is on a specific initiative where you want to do this for a couple of years. So I'm definitely smarter before than what I started with this sessions. So thank you all once again for coming.
NIIT, Business Impact Accelerated.